Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to Africa Link this Tuesday, the 2nd of May. I hope you enjoy the long weekend. I am Jen Ayeko Kumet in Bonn, Germany.
With me, Wanjiko Mwaura.
In today's edition, the Central African Republic sits in a quagmire as a solution to the country's civil conflict seems to be far from sight.
4 years on into this conflict, it's still very, very difficult for the average civilian living in these areas.
And German's Foreign Minister Sigmar Gabriel visits Ethiopia as the country puts Africa on the forefront during its G20 presidency.
Wir haben der Afrikanischen Union gesagt, dass wir schon sehen, dass auch Europa.
We have told the African Union that we do recognize that Europe must change its relationship with Africa.
We hear from listeners around the continent on these and more stories.
All that and more, like Wanjiku said, coming up shortly. But first, we get to hear what's been happening around the world.
I'm Mark Caldwell with the DW News. German Chancellor Angela Merkel has been holding talks with Russian President Vladimir Putin in the resort of Sochi. She described the meeting, which touched on Syria, Ukraine and human rights, as constructive. The talks were held amid bilateral tensions over Germany's support for sanctions against Russia following its aggression in Ukraine. Before the meeting, the two leaders briefly face the camera. Here's Chancellor Merkel.
We will also discuss bilateral relations, and I am gladly anticipating our talks.
Greece and its international creditors have reached a preliminary deal which will allow the country to receive an urgently needed bailout loan. The agreement commits Greece to implementing another round of austerity measures and tax reforms. In return, the country will receive funds so it can repay 7.5 billion euros in debt in 2 months' time. Some Greeks expressed frustration at the deal, including this banking employee in Athens, who told Reuters Television that little had been achieved in spite of lengthy negotiations.
Taxes are rising, unemployment is rising. This should have ended a year and a half ago. I think they didn't do well. So,
the deal has yet to be approved by Greek lawmakers and Eurozone finance ministers. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. South Africa's Financial Services Board, the FSB, is investigating certain trades on the financial markets made in the hours before Finance Minister Pravin Gordhan was summoned back home and subsequently sacked by President Jacob Zuma in late March. The Johannesburg Stock Exchange said in April it was probing trades involving currency futures and would be forwarding its findings to the FSB. The rand weakened by about 2.5% before Gordhan was recalled and fell further after the news broke. The number of acutely malnourished children in Somalia is expected to climb to 1.4 million by the end of the year, the UN Children's Agency UNICEF said on Tuesday. It also warned that just over 250,000 of those children were so severely malnourished that they could die. Germany's Foreign Minister Sigmar Gabriel is in Ethiopia for talks with the African Union and with the Ethiopian government and opposition. Gabriel arrived in Addis Ababa after a brief trip to Somalia, during which he promised the country a further 70 million euros in aid to combat the drought. For more news and information, please visit our website, dw.com. I'm Mark Caldwell.
You're listening to DW's Africa Link, a program that brings you news and stories from around the continent. I am Jen Ayeko Kumet.
And me, Wanjiko Mwaura.
And we start this story from Central African Republic. Only yesterday, we reported about aid agencies sounding an alarm over the worsening humanitarian situation in the Central African Republic. And today, we are reporting about the killing of at least 45 civilians by armed groups over the past 3 months. According to Human Rights Watch, the fight for power between the Christian and Muslim rebel groups exposes civilians to deadly attacks. Human Rights Watch's Louis Marge has been telling me what the current situation looks like.
Well, the situation in the Central African Republic right now is very worrying. This fighting has, since late 2016, really increased in ferocity. And predictably, civilians are paying the price. 4 years on into this conflict, it's still very, very difficult for the average civilian living in these areas.
It is still very difficult, as you just put it. But what I'm wondering is that this actually happened as the U.S. Special Forces were still in the country. Why were they not able to at least stop or minimize the attack?
So the U.S. Special Forces are based in the southeast of the country. And there, with the Ugandan army, they are working on what's known as the counter-LRA operations. The only international force that has both the mandate and the capacity to deal with the fighting that we're talking about is a United Nations peacekeeping force. But obviously, in the center of the country, they're finding that very difficult.
Now, with the withdrawal of the foreign troops, by foreign troops, I certainly mean the U.S. Special Forces and the Ugandan forces, much as you say they were not really mandated to do this, where does this leave the country?
Well, it's a really good question, and it's a very pertinent question. We're seeing this violence spread to the southeast. With the pullout of the U.S. and the Ugandan troops, this really couldn't happen at a more worse time. The U.S. and the Ugandans were a very stabilizing force in the southeast of the country.
All this is happening in a country with an established government. I mean, Central African Republic had elections last year and the president won, he was sworn in. What does this tell us about the current regime?
I think what this represents is the fact that despite some political progress, we're still seeing the realities on the ground really limit what this government is capable of doing. President Ouattara inherited a government that was basically not really functioning outside the capital, outside of Bangui. He inherited a government with very, very little state security forces.
In your opinion, should the African Union be doing more?
In many regards, Addis Ababa, the capital of the African Union, it sort of let the Central African Republic crisis drop. There are many, many African Union states that are very influential with the Seleka rebels, in particular Chad and Sudan. And these countries, via the African Union, could be pressured into reining in some of the fighters and mercenaries that still operate within these groups.
I was speaking to Louise Marge of Human Rights Watch in Nairobi.
And looking over to our Facebook page, a comment coming in from Bobo Ashanti says, we must avoid the pitfalls of tribalism. If we are divided amongst ourselves on tribal lines, we open our doors to foreign intervention and its potential harmful consequences. And another comment from Musa says, cha, Africans, when can we learn tolerance for each other?
Good question out there, but we'll discuss that a little later. Let's now talk a bit of some international relations here. North Korea has accused the United States of risking nuclear war after two U.S. hypersonic bombers flew into the Korean Peninsula during a military training exercise. There are fears that Pyongyang may conduct another nuclear test this month, while U.S. President Donald Trump says he is open to possible discussions with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Annie Camus with the details.
Tensions remain high between North Korea and the United States. Pyongyang on Tuesday accused the U.S. of pushing the region to the brink of nuclear war, with the country's official KCNA news agency branding the exercise a reckless military provocation. The two supersonic bombers were participating in an exercise with South Korea. A South Korean Defense Ministry spokesperson told a briefing in Seoul the drill was intended to dissuade aggravation from the North and test their preparedness for any further nuclear tests. The incident comes shortly after US President Donald Trump said he would be willing to open discussions with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un under appropriate conditions. At a press briefing on Monday, U.S. Press Secretary Sean Spicer told reporters that North Korea would need to tone down its rhetoric for that to occur.
We've got to see their provocative behavior ratcheted down immediately. There's a lot of conditions that I think would have to happen with respect to its behavior and to show signs of good faith. Clearly, the conditions are not there right now. But I think the president's made it clear, as Secretary Tillerson had the other day, that if the circumstances present themselves, we would be prepared to, but they're clearly not at this time.
North Korea's only powerful ally, China, has again been openly critical of the US military's planned anti-missile defense system based in South Korea, and fears it may reach inside Chinese territory. Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson Geng Shuang told a media briefing on Tuesday it would welcome President Trump's willingness to open discussions with North Korea if conditions were appropriate.
We've noticed the recent statements from the U.S. and the proactive signals they contain. At the same time, we believe that as the two direct participants in the peninsula's nuclear issue, China and the U.S. should take active steps as soon as possible to indicate their sincerity about restoring dialogue.
Ine Camille's reporting.
Now, again, with your comments, Nixon Mwirigi from Kenya says, I'm afraid of what's going to happen. An irrational leader cannot reason with a more irrational leader. Africa is in the middle of this. We do not have any missile protection mechanism if they start a war. Adam from Ghana says the UN should start working out how to disarm North Korea or be ready to see the world like a junkyard.
Interesting. I like the way people have their own interpretations and understanding about it. And I like the fact that they also share with us that. I can also see another comment coming in from Lamine Fofuna Gabla from Montreal in Quebec. He says it was a wise decision from President Donald Trump to say he's open to a possible discussions with North Korean leader Kim Jong, because sanctions had been on North Koreans for as long as I can remember. The Western nations have been building and fighting plots to attack against North Korea. Very interesting comments coming out from there. But we leave it at that and go back to Africa, and this time round in Ethiopia, where yesterday German Foreign Minister Zygmunt Gabriel became the first foreign minister to visit Somalia, and today he's in Ethiopia. His visit comes as Germany makes Africa a key item on the agenda of its G20 presidency, as the Horn of Africa faces a huge drought and hunger crisis. Here's Crispin Wakdewo with the details.
In Addis Ababa, German Foreign Minister Zygmunt Gabriel has been holding talks with head of the African Union Commission Musa Faki Mahamat. Speaking after the meeting, Gabriel called for greater coordination among European nations on policy towards Africa. There are often too many different procedures for tackling developments on the continent.
We have told the African Union that we do recognize that Europe must change its relationship with Africa. In all honesty, I think one can say that the previous Europe-Africa relationship has not worked. Instead, individual member states have pursued their own interests, sometimes linked to the former colonial times. In that regard, the African Union is right to say that we in the European Union must also change our attitude. Europe should not just be interested in Africa because so many refugees are coming to us.
Weil so viele Flüchtlinge zu uns kommen.
Mahamat expressed the need for a common European perspective on Africa, and in a reference to Europe's migration crisis, said it would be pointless to build camps for refugees in North Africa. Neither walls nor camps would prevent people from migrating. Job opportunities for young people were what was needed, the head of the African Union Commission said.
Crispin Mwakidewo with that report. And again, I'm sure that one of these days, young Africans especially, are taking very keen interest in Europe-Africa relations. And
yes,
I'm sure they've been commenting.
Absolutely. And also the fact that we have the AU that has a new head, that is Mr. Mahamat. And Federica Mulika from the USA says, Mr. Mahamat's opinion on the migration crisis is right. Building refugee camps in North Africa doesn't solve the problem. I think the best solution is the European Union investing funds in the African countries and opening markets for African products.
Apparently, Ghanaians are very active on this. That's why I told you, young Africans are very, very keen on knowing what's happening. And a comment from Pakwesi from Kumasi, Ghana says, Mr. Zygmunt Gabriel is right on point. I don't think African leaders were elected into office to build walls and camps to confine the good people of Africa. Interesting comment.
Yes, indeed. And just to remind our listeners, if you're wondering, how can I be a part of the show? Well, go over to our Facebook page. That's DW Africa. And there you find these topics and more, which you can contribute to. And then you get a chance to be on the show. One last comment just before we quickly go. Julius Constantine Mushi from Tanzania says the head of the AU is absolutely right. African leaders should address the issue now.
And we'll be back shortly. And you're still listening to DW's Africa Link, coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I am Jane Ayeko-Kumet.
With me, Wanjiko Mwaura.
Still to come, Zimbabweans live by grace and hope as economic decline bites hard.
I used to pay the school fees for my kids during the holidays, but now it's difficult, but I think it's just going to take a little bit of grace and hope, otherwise wouldn't be alive.
And this is our question of the day. Can social media movements change politics in African countries? Tell us.
We shall be discussing that a little later. And you too can be part of the discussion. So we continue with that story from Zimbabwe. Now, for Christians, grace is the love of God sown to the unlovely, while hope implies that God's will be done. One would imagine that Zimbabweans are godly people, for most of them say, in these tight moments, it's only grace and hope that keeps them moving. On Wednesday, Zimbabwe social movements have come together with a demand for government to prioritize citizen needs. From Harare, Privilege Mushanri sent us this report.
Good morning, sir. How do you want to do today?
I need for everything.
It is mid-morning in Zimbabwe's capital, Harare. Moses Madziro, a hairdresser, chats with a client. He, like many other professionals, is feeling the pinch of an underperforming economy. The economy is biting on his clients' pockets. They used to come twice a week. They now come once in a fortnight. This has taken a toll on his family, too.
I used to pay the school fees for my kids during the holidays, but now, because the economy is biting, I'm having to go to the headmaster and make a payment plan so that maybe I pay for my kids, but I stagger the payments. If something comes, I go and pay.
Zimbabwe's economy has been on a downward spiral in the past year. The central bank introduced a surrogate currency, the bond notes, but this too also is disappearing on the market. In 2009, the government abolished the local currency owing to high inflation and adopted a multi-currency system, including the euro and the US dollar. These have also vanished from the market. In 2016, civic movements attempted to put pressure on government to address governance and economic issues, but it all resulted in the arrest of various civil society leaders. On Wednesday, the loose groupings of the social movements issued a joint statement and demanded that government acts on addressing the worsening situation. Pastor Ivan Mawarire, who led the Hush This Flag movement, read the statement.
This Zimbabwe that we want is within reach. But it is only within reach if we come together, stand together, speak together, and act together. Today, as we challenge our government, we invite you, the citizens, on a journey of finding each other for that one common goal, creating the Zimbabwe that we want.
Political and economic analyst Shinge Munyeza says going back to basics and adopting austerity measures is the only way Zimbabwe can be brought back to track. He, however, cautioned that it is unlikely that the ruling party and government will listen to the calls by citizens, especially when faced with an election in 2018.
Those in power are unlikely going to implement austerity measures because it is the very thing that will kick them out of power. So we are caught between the rock and the hard place. The ruling party and the government right now will not, in my assessment, embark on austerity measures, which give us at least pain for now, but relief, progress, development, growth, and prosperity in the future.
Privilege Mushanri in Harare.
Linda T. Masarira says, if you're not doing anything, you're not paying attention. You're the change you've been waiting for. And she uses the hashtag This Flag, which Pastor Ivan has been using. Nkosi says, asks, who will be Zimbabwe's John Magufuli? Again, using the hashtag This Flag. Now, remember, the question is, can social media movements change politics in African countries?
Yes, I hope it can, but I see that there's a mix between politics and religion there.
Africa on the move.
Perhaps it's a good idea never to give up your dream, for you just don't know whose life you might change when you leave it. That's exactly the story of Nsoro Nkweso. His parents could not consent to his dream, but that was not the end of the road. In 2007, Nkweso co-founded the Kigamboni Community Center in Dar es Salaam. Today, he's giving back to his community and he's an inspiration to many young people. But what was his journey like? We find out in this report by Mabel Gundlach and is now presented by Fred Muvunyi.
Ever since he was a little boy, Nasr Nkweso had wanted to be an acrobat, but it was not easy to make his dream come true.
I had a big fight with my family and I decided to leave from home when I was 12 years old. And I went to live on the street for like 12 months. Then I said, my mom, she found me and she said, okay, I have to go back home so I can do what I want to do.
And Nkweso did so. But the drastic experience of life in the streets left its marks. 8 years ago, together with some friends, he founded the Kigamboni Community Center, or KCC for short. It is a place where young people are taught various crafts by volunteers. For instance, young women can learn tailoring. Normally, Nkweso says, these women will be sitting at home waiting to get married. Now they can acquire new skills that will help them to earn a living in the future.
Aim of KCC in general, to fight against poverty. Give chance to children and local people to express themselves through their talent, through their education. Give those children and people who had no chance to go anywhere to raise their talent or to have education so they can come KCC for free.
Okay, my name is John. I come from...
The number of courses offered grew throughout the years. Today, computer classes are not the only popular courses here. English is top of the list for many students too. Since its foundation, KCC has been mostly dependent on donations. It operates on the contributions made by its management team and local, as well as international volunteers. KCC also runs some businesses which help to pay for the social programs after workers get a percentage of the profits. One KCC social program includes a shelter for homeless youth. Young men living on the streets of the capital, like many thousands, have to seek refuge here. But only a few are admitted, says Nasr Nkweso.
We really want to help even more, but we don't have enough funds to pay for all of them. So for the moment, we are able to accommodate only 12 boys in the shelter.
Every Saturday, the center is turned into a stage for residents to demonstrate what they have learned in the past week. Dancing, singing, and pantomime, many locals can no longer envisage a life without their center. The founders wish to serve as a role model for other communities too.
We cannot reach everyone in the world, so we are really happy to support other communities to start their own community center like KCC.
Youth unemployment disproportionately affects urban youth and young women in particular. By the end of 2014, the official youth unemployment rate in Tanzania reached almost 15%. The center wants to strengthen its contribution towards increased employment for young people. There are plans to make it financially self-sufficient and to expand the center in coming years. Nasr Nkweso and his collaborators have already bought a piece of land to enable their initiative to grow.
That encouraging report was filed by Mabel Gundlach. Now, Wanjuki, my own opinion is that everybody in society should be a role model, and not just for their own self-respect, but also for respect of others. What do you think?
I agree. I mean, we've just listened to what Nasoro Nkweso is doing in Dar es Salaam, and role models are everywhere in any field.
And again, my own opinion is that it's very important for every parent to support their children to live their dreams. But we leave it at that and go to Europe.
Focus Europe.
France and Europe is at crossroads as the second round of the French elections loom. But the question is, will dissatisfaction push the people to vote for Marine Le Pen, or will the high-flying politician Emmanuel Macron's message win the day? Poll predictions already suggest Macron will win the election, and the political establishment has already thrown its weight behind him. But Le Pen is fighting hard. She's temporarily stepped down from the leadership of her party, the National Front. But will voters buy this strategy? Barbara Vissel is DW's correspondent. She traveled around France during the campaigns and has been speaking to our colleague Emma Wells about Le Pen's strategy.
What Marine Le Pen is trying to do here, I think, is distance herself a bit from the day-to-day party business and show herself more presidential. In France, the president is sort of like a lofty figure, somebody who is above the normal political business. And I think that is really what she's trying to convey. Of course, she will still be pulling the strings in the party, and of course, the party will still do what she wants. But she really tries to show herself as being a bit elevated from the concerns of everyday politics and try to be the mother of the French nation.
So far in the French elections, the polls seem to have been pretty accurate because they did predict that the two front runners would be Marine Le Pen and Emmanuel Macron, and that is what's happened. They are now predicting that Emmanuel Macron will win by quite a big margin. Do you think that people are voting for Macron just because of their fears of what would happen if Le Pen became president, or do you think that his policies and his program are far more attractive to the majority of the French electorate?
It's both, of course. I mean, he does have his own electorate. Then, of course, many of the socialists will now come to him. He will get some from the camp of the very left extremist Jean-Luc Mélenchon. And then he will get some of the more centrist Republicans, the Conservative Party. So it'll be a mélange, as the French say. It'll be a mix of different parties and different voters, segments of different voters.
You mentioned the far-left candidate Jean-Luc Mélenchon there. Do you think that his followers could be decisive? Because some, of course, will vote for Emmanuel Macron, but some may not at all, because he would be seen as far too centrist for them, surely.
That is another crucial point, because Jean-Luc Mélenchon was the only one who, on the night of the first round, did not advise his followers to now switch camp and vote for Macron. He may have a number of protest voters in his camp who then say, OK, if we don't get really left, radical left-wing government, we're going to vote Le Pen just to sort of smash the state. And then at one point, you know, the old chaos theory, at one point we can take over and there will be revolution in France. And there are dreamers like that in France, indeed. And then also, of course, the main problem is abstentions. From the Mélenchon camp, there will be a number of people simply don't go to vote because they say, I don't want either of those candidates, so I just deny my vote to them. And the fewer people go to vote, the better the chances are for Marine Le Pen.
That was DW's correspondent, Barbara Vessel. Now, Wanjiku, let's revisit the question of the day.
Yes. Can social media movements change politics in African countries? Well, we've been receiving your responses, and Washington from Zimbabwe says, I think social media movements can lead to political change in Africa. However, most African leaders are now aware of the significance of social media in today's politics, and that's why we've seen internet blackouts in other parts of Cameroon and press censorship in Tanzania recently.
Yes, and another comment coming in from Peter Elegua from Kenya says, social media is becoming the powerful tool, and you can see from Uganda, the government switched it off during the election. I can't forget that one.
Julius from Tanzania says, in social media, that's where the new generation interacts, so I'm certain sure that any movement in the social media would have a huge impact on African countries, though more has to be in place, like having free electoral commissions.
Another one from Cameroon coming in saying social media. Oh, yeah, you already talked about that one. We were seeing the same comments, Wanjiku. There are quite a lot of them. MacDonald Dimba from Kaofe Zambia says, yes, it is. It can be because many people spend more of their time on social media.
Yes. Ben Messer from Ghana says, I think it's time Robert Mugabe did the honourable thing by stepping down. He's been in power for far too long. Zimbabwe needs a new leadership to help revive its struggling economy.
Too many comments there, Wanjiku. Thank you so much for all of you writing in, but we don't have enough time. I just want to remind everybody not to forget to watch the match, European Champions League, Madrid, Atletico and Real Madrid today. Thank you for listening to Africa Link. I am Jen Aiko-Kemet.
With me, Wanjiku Mwaura.